Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
No, wasn't Michael Cohen. Wasn't James Comey. Wasn't anybody else. It was Tom Brady pleading the fifth. It was the plea heard round the world. Everybody seems to be talking about it. I'm Hub Arkush with you for another hour tonight as you are listening to 670 The Score, number one sports radio station in Chicago. And it is my pleasure now to welcome in Ryan Hannibal, who covers the Patriots, among other things, for WEEI in Boston. And Ryan, I really appreciate you joining us tonight to give us a little bit of local knowledge. And I thought it was important to play the actual soundbite, because, you know, people have been reacting to this when they hear a sports talk host talk about it or they read it in the paper. But when you listen to Brady say it, my reaction was he was just screwing around. Am I underestimating all this?
I don't know if I would say screwing around, but I think that people are taking, you know, that little snippet right there and making it into a much bigger thing to what it actually was. Because he said that part, he joked about it, and then went into a longer answer where he sort of went in and praised Belichick for getting the most out of him as a quarterback. And he sort of, you know, played things both ways. He sort of, you know, placated to the side that he does get – He's not treated as well as he thinks he should be treated. He thinks maybe things should be different, you know, with the facility and his personal trainer, as we know. But then he also praised Belichick. So he sort of, you know, took a couple of jabs at him, but then in that same vein said, oh, you're the greatest coach to ever, you know, coach a game of football, and I'm so glad I played for you. So he had it both ways, in my opinion. I think he went into that thing wanting to get something off of his chest, and I think that, you know, comment that you played was probably at the top of the list, but also he's smart enough not to just, you know, go off on his coach, because he doesn't want that in the headlines, that's for sure.
Ryan Hannibal with WEEI Radio in Boston, one of the top sports radio stations in the country. Obviously, it's Patriots country. We're talking about the latest furor between the Patriots and Ryan, of course, Tom Brady.
I hope not.
Bill Belichick. And Ryan, I don't know if you're familiar or not, one of my jobs is a sideline reporter for Westwood One Radio. I'm there on a lot of Monday and Sunday nights. I hear the interviews every Monday night between Jim Gray and Tom Brady. I mean, I work with these guys, and sometimes I'm confused by the relationship between Gray and Brady.
Oh, yeah.
But there is a relationship there, and I think that in some respects plays into this whole soundbite coming around as well.
Yeah, he's very close with Jim Gray. As you obviously know, the Westwood One stuff, you know, every Monday night and, you know, Saturdays and all that during the season. But this isn't the first time that Brady sort of used Jim Gray as like a moderator at, you know, an event. He actually did one up in Boston. I think it was honestly his first comment after the Deflategate season. I think that, like, it was in February or March that he spoke at a local college and had Jim Gray moderate the events. And it was sort of similar to this, where it was, you know, questions about, you know, the football season, actual football stuff. So he's very close with Jim Gray. He's his guy. It seems like whenever he seems to have a message, I guess, that he wants to get out there, he can sort of put it in Jim Gray's ear, ask me this, and we'll go like this. So it's not a surprise that Jim Gray was moderating this, and, you know, I think that, you know, they're very, very close.
You know, Ryan, explain to our listeners, if you will, I think what is lost sometimes with the Patriots, and particularly these two guys, is you're talking about arguably the two single most powerful people in the NFL, and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. And if they're going to coexist for 19 years, as they have, there's going to be some moments like this. And yet it just strikes me as impossible that either one of them at this stage of their careers even wants to consider the possibility of not being together for the last year, two, or three, and trying to win another one, two, or three Super Bowls.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you. And the biggest thing, especially around here, is, you know, everyone thinks that Belichick and Brady are, like, you know, the best of friends. That, you know, they go out to dinner together in the off season. They play golf together, and, you know, in the off season they go on trips together. That's not the case. They're not best friends. I mean, they're a typical boss and employee relationship, and it's a strong relationship. I mean, it's been on record that the two meet every Tuesday to go over the game plan, and Brady gives his thoughts, and Belichick gives his thoughts. And so, you know, when it comes down to the actual game of football, they're on the same page. No one cares more about winning than the two of them, and obviously we've seen their success. And so, you know, anytime you're in a relationship, not only football, but any job, any relationship, there's going to be your ups and downs in 18 years together. It's just human nature, and I think that people, you know, around here especially sort of want to ignore that this could be a possibility, but the fact that I think Robert Kraft said, you know, it's healthy to have some tension. It's okay to have tension. I think that ultimately, you know, gets the most out of these two. And in the end, they both care about winning so much that I don't think they would do anything to jeopardize what goes on the field on Sundays. And I mean, yeah, sure, they both have very big egos and don't want to give in to you know, what each side wants to have happen. And that's totally understandable. But when it comes down to it, they both care so much about winning, and I can't see, you know, anything getting in the way from, you know, the actual football stuff.
You know, Ryan, irrespective of what the rest of the world and the league think about it and who was right and who was wrong, I think it's always been pretty obvious that both Tom Brady and Robert Kraft were really pissed at Bill Belichick for the whole Videogate thing. And I think it's been pretty clear that Kraft and Belichick were frustrated with Brady for the whole Deflategate thing.
I think that's 100% accurate. I think that you go back to Deflategate, Belichick took himself right out of it in that first press conference right after it happened. He wanted no association to it. And even, you know, as the thing dragged out, he wanted nothing to do with it. He didn't really stand up for Brady that much. And I think, you know, Robert Kraft was trying to placate both sides, you know, with the owners and him. So, yeah, I think that this isn't the first time that there's been sort of friction between all three parties. And I think, like we said before, when you're together for so long and you're, you know, as big as all three figures are, there's going to be things like this that come up. And it's just the way that things are. And I think that in the end, they're all three are strong enough and, you know, care about the franchise and winning so much that they'll put, once the game starts, once season starts, once training camp starts, they'll put everything aside and things, you know, will be somewhat, you know, as normal as they can be.
You know, you can debate a lot of things about professional football, but I don't think anybody's going to debate that the New England Patriots are not only the dominant dynasty in the NFL right now, they're one of the great dynasties in the history of sports, lasting for really two decades now, if you think about it. And I wonder, Ryan, we're visiting with Ryan Hannibal from WEEI Radio in Boston, in the New England area. How much of the tumult currently surrounding this team, and it's not just Brady. Gronkowski had his moment, and now everything's going to be fine. He's going to play. How much of this is Bill's unwillingness to explain or even offer any reasonable response to anybody as to why his Pro Bowl cornerback Malcolm Butler never got off the sidelines in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think that added to everything that sort of happened going into that game. And, you know, there was some frustration, there was some tension with the way that things were going over the course of the season. And then you had that happen in the game, and Bill still hasn't given any explanation. And there's even been players that have spoken here and there in the last couple of weeks or so that say that they, you know, tried to get an explanation but didn't get one. Danny Amendola was one of them. And even Brady in that thing with Jim Gray yesterday, he said flat out that he wished Malcolm Butler was out there, you know, in the game, and that he said that he didn't even know that he didn't play a single snap until after the game. I kind of find that a little bit hard to believe, but he's clearly, you know, bothered by it. I mean, all these players, they gave up everything that they had over the course of the season for that one game, and in the end, they feel that they didn't get the best shot to win that game because of a decision by Bill Belichick. And you know, he hasn't gone up to an explanation, and I don't know if the fans necessarily deserve it, but I do think the players on that team deserve to get one. I sort of thought that it was going to happen, you know, during that week of the Super Bowl, during their exit interviews, and, you know, they could ask, you know, exactly what happened, and word would trickle it down. But the way that things have gone so far this offseason, I don't think these players got it, and I think that's sort of lingering on some frustration from that game.
It really is interesting, though. You know, you see people reacting to the fact that Butler is now gone. Danny Amendola is in Miami. But what people forget is that Tom Brady is the reigning MVP. He is still the best player in the NFL. Gronkowski is going to be back, and he's healthy. Dante Hightower is going to be back. Julian Edelman is going to be back. Malcolm Mitchell is going to be back. And they're going to be the favorites to win another Super Bowl.
Yeah, I was actually, as you started that, I was going to say they're even better than they were last year. And even going into the Super Bowl, you sort of knew that they were going to be a better team in 2018 just because of those names that you mentioned. They didn't have their best receiver for Tom Brady and Julian Edelman, and they didn't have their leader on defense in Dante Hightower for most of the season. So just getting those two players back, they're going to be a better team. And I think they, you know, did a decent job this offseason in improving the defense with Adrian Claiborne as a defensive end, Jason McCourty joining his twin brother Devin in the secondary. So, you know, you just look at this team, and while, you know, people can, you know, criticize and say, hey, you know, there's some friction and they're not the same, you just look at the talent on the field. They're even better than they were last year. And honestly, the AFC East isn't really getting much better either. So I think, you know, we can talk about all this in the offseason, but in the end, we're probably going to be looking at a, you know, a 12-4 team that wins the AFC East and probably has home field advantage throughout the whole playoffs.
Ryan, there is one question, there's more than one, but there's one significant question. With another team, it would be a huge concern. Nate Solder is a Pro Bowl tackle, and he's been Tom Brady's blindside guy for the last 7-8 seasons. He's now in New York. They've got a couple kids that they've been grooming, but they don't have a ready answer there. Is it a concern, or with Dante Scarnecchia, is it something you just don't worry about?
I think it's a little bit of a concern. I mean, obviously, Dante Scarnecchia is one of the best offensive line coaches in probably the history of football. But you're right. They don't have anyone that you can just say, hey, he's going to be the left tackle. They brought in a lot of – they have their third-round pick from last year, Tony Garcia, didn't play at all last year. He's an option. They traded for Trent Brown from the 49ers during the draft. But you don't really know what side he plays on. He played mostly on the right side. They re-signed a backup in Adrian Waddle. It was their backup for most of last season. So there's really no starting option. So, and the one thing about Scarnecchia is he likes to find a five-man rotation and stick with that five. So it's going to create some competition during training camp, but you know, you'll have to keep in the back of your mind, what if these guys don't work out? There's nothing to show that these guys can step in and play. So I guess when you look at this whole roster, definitely the offensive tackle position is one that stands out as one of the biggest question marks as we are, you know, right now, the first week of May.
I'm guessing the third round kid last year, Garcia, was it?
Yeah.
Who missed all of last year is probably the hope. And people forget that while Nate Solder was a very high draft pick out of Colorado, he was a bit of a surprise when they took him. And that's why, you know, here in Chicago, the Bears just brought back Harry Hiestand, who, like Scarnecchia, is considered one of the top O-line coaches in football. And for people who don't follow the Patriots, don't know the Scarnecchia history, when you've got something to mold like Garcia, it's why it's almost you don't worry as much when it's the Patriots as you do with other teams.
Yeah, they always seem to take a rookie offensive lineman in the draft just so they can work with Scarnecchia, and he just seems to have a knack for making players better. Marcus Cannon's a perfect example of that. When Scarnecchia took his 2 years of not coaching because he thought he was going to retire, Cannon, you know, wasn't, you know, a great player by any means. And Scarnecchia came back. He sort of reworked his positioning and the way that he did his hands. And now he got a big contract and is one of the best right tackles in the game. And I think that Marcus Cannon's not the only player that Scarnecchia has done a great job with. And that's sort of an underlooked part of the New England team is just how good of a coach Dante Scarnecchia is.
Ryan Hannibal from WEEI Radio in Boston, good enough to take a little time out for us on this Wednesday evening. Of course, it's an hour later there. So, Ryan, I'm going to let you go. One more before we do, though, and I guess it's the $64,000 question. As I just said, he's the reigning MVP. I mean, I don't care if he's 40 years old. What are the signs we're looking for in Brady? I mean, is there any reason to believe he can't do this for the 2, 3, 4 more years that he talks about?
It's probably just staying healthy. I mean, we've seen over the last couple of seasons he's, you know, missed more practices than usual late in the year. He's been banged up. You know, early in the season we see these, you know, nicks and bruises and signs that maybe he isn't 100%. But, you know, when he is, he's still the best quarterback in the NFL. And I think it almost comes down to just protecting him and not having him vulnerable for some big hits. Because I think, you know, if he can stand in the pocket clean and not be touched on a 16-game season basis and stays healthy, he could probably do this to, like he says, until he's mid-40s. So as long as he doesn't take any big hits and avoids injuries, I can't see any reason why he can't, you know, reach his goal and play until he's 45.
All right, Ryan, I stayed away from the Josh McDaniels stuff because our signal kind of booms into Indianapolis. I didn't want to go there. So there's always plenty of stories for you guys to cover. We'll get that one next time. I do appreciate you taking time out for us tonight. Have a great night.
Not a problem. Thanks a lot.
That is Ryan Hannibal, WEEI Radio in Boston. We're going to come back in just a moment. We can continue NFL talk, get back to your Bears thoughts if you want. Anything you want about the NFL. We had some spirited Cubs and White Sox discussion earlier as well. Give us a call, 312-644-6767. I'll check your texts as well from 67011. We are back in just a moment. This hour on The Score is brought to you by Horowitz & Horowitz, Illinois' top personal injury lawyers. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for being with us this evening. We've got about 35, 40 minutes left, the we being myself. I'm Hub Arker, sitting in for Lawrence Holmes. Great job, as always, in the production booth from Eli Hershkovitz and Herb Lawrence. Julie DeCaro in the update studio. Julie, I'll have another update for you in about 6 minutes, and then she will take over in here at 10, take you right up until midnight before the grobber comes in for overnights. If you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions you want answered to cbschicago.com/legal advice. Look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. That's cbschicago.com/legal advice. And, you know, guys, when we work here, we've got three monitors in the studio. You like when they're all working. We've only had two working for a while now, but that's enough to have the Yankees and the Astros on one set and the Jazz and the Rockets on another. And I am just, I'm struck by watching this Rockets game. I get people that James Harden is James Harden. And I get that Chris Paul is Chris Paul. But the Houston Rockets play more one-man isolation basketball for a 60-win team than any team I've ever seen. I mean, there's nothing. Either Harden has the ball and keeps it for 18 seconds, then tries to make a play, or sometimes Paul does when Harden's on the bench. And haven't seen much of anything else, and that's why Utah is looking like they might have a chance to steal game two in Houston. They are up 104-96 with 5:11 to play in the game. A long way to go, of course, in an NBA game. 312-644-6767 is our phone number. We're going to get you some Sammy Sosa in a few minutes. I don't know if you want it, but we're going to get it for you anyway. It's been interesting. Sammy visited with my buddy David Kaplan over at NBC Sports. I believe it was yesterday. We've got a couple sound bites, and there was actually some interesting stuff in there. Guys, I do this for a living. I do not idolize athletes. There are some, when I get to meet them, that I like more than others. There are some that I respect more than others. But just as a sports fan, I have always remained an unabashed Sammy Sosa fan. I get that he cheated. That's the perspective that people want to put it in. I don't know how much he cheated, because it appears that everybody playing the game at that time was doing the same thing. So at that point, if it's all equal, is it cheating? I don't know. I don't want to get into that. But I think it's, and I get that he was a bad teammate in the end too. Believe me, I'm not trying to sing the man's praises. But I think what is often lost with Sammy Sosa is that between him and Mark McGwire, they went a long way to saving baseball. Baseball would not be what it is today were it not for what they did in 1998 at a time when the game was in real trouble. I don't know what it would be. Might still be great. Might be interesting. But the impact that Sosa had on the game is undeniable. He is still the only man ever to hit more than 60 homers in three different seasons. And he's been silent. He's a pariah out at Wrigley. He's not welcome back. That's fine. I don't want to start that debate. Doesn't matter to me. I have my memories, and they're good memories as a Cubs fan. But he did have a pretty interesting visit with David Kaplan the other day. So we have a couple sound bites for you. We're going to do that in the last half hour. Right now, I want to squeeze in another call before we get to a scoreboard update. Jake has been waiting patiently out in Oak Lawn. Jake, how you doing?
Hey, Hub. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Job, you should have your own show. You're a great host.
Oh, thank you, Jake.
You take
I
more
appreciate
calls
that.
Than just about anybody else. Listen, I just have two questions. First one is about the White Sox. This Tim Anderson's on a pace. He's making like 35 errors since he came up. Do you think he can really play shortstop at the major league level when the Sox, if they ever do get good? And my other question is about Mitch. If he goes on and has however long his career is and he stays healthy, instead of having a career like Tom Brady, he has one like Jim McMahon. Do you think he still was worth the second pick in the draft? Listen, I'm going to hang up and listen to your response.
All right, Jake.
Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to give you kind of a, it's almost like a highlight reel answer on Tim Anderson, but I think it's a fair answer. Most experts, of which I am not one, I don't claim to be a baseball expert, but most experts agree we are in possibly the greatest era in the history of the game for young shortstops. When you look around Major League Baseball and you look at the talent, you know, with Lindor, and I don't know if he even put Baez and and Russell in the category. But you look at Seager and you look at Story and all over baseball, D. Gregorius, whoever you want to talk about. It is arguably the greatest era of young shortstops in the history of the game, and Tim Anderson is never mentioned in that company. So do I think he can be a shortstop on a winning team off what I've seen so far? I think the jury's still out on that. I think that's possible. I think he's a really nice athlete. I mentioned earlier, and I don't mean to be name-dropping here because I don't really know Ozzie Guillen. I've met him a few times, but we were together in the studio at NBC Sports last night. We were talking about this, and Ozzie, and I'm going to quote him, said he's a great athlete. You know, we were pushing him, and he said he's a great athlete. You know, so no, he is not one of the top young shortstops in baseball right now. But can the Sox win with him? I think the jury is still out on that. He's a pretty good ball player. As far as Mitch Trubisky, the comparison to Jim McMahon, God, I hope it's not that, because I've never really been a big Jim fan. We get along fine personally, but I think he cheated himself and cheated the game. Had he taken better care of himself and been more committed, who knows how good he would have been and how many Super Bowls that team would have won. But they won one, and he was the catalyst behind what some people call the greatest team in the history of the game for a single season. And so if Mitch Trubisky were to be that guy, yeah, I think it'd be worth the second overall pick in the draft. He's not going to be that guy, but if that was his list of accomplishments, yeah, I think it would be worth it. Hopefully it's going to be a lot more than that, but to the playoffs, and then let's win a playoff game, and then let's get to a Super Bowl, and let's win a Super Bowl, and then we'll have the conversation. Right now we're going to talk to Julie DeCaro in the update studio. Julie, thank you very much. We're going to jump right back to the phones. We'll have that Sammy Sosa stuff for you in just a couple minutes, but Derek has been waiting patiently in Wheeling. Derek, thank you for calling. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I just wanted to get your opinion on the Bears undrafted free agents that they brought in. If you had to pick one or two of those guys, who would you think could be a pleasant surprise for the Bears in that group? I know Greg Gabriel said that running back from Oregon State, I believe it is, he kind of liked him, but I just wanted to get your opinion on those same players.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Nall is the running back that we're talking about from Oregon State. This is a kid who was tremendously productive in college, almost 2,800 yards from scrimmage. He had 28 touchdowns over three seasons. Could be maybe a fullback or an H-back in the NFL. The other kid that is going to be, or actually I should say the other two kids that are going to be very familiar to the local folks, Niles Morgan, a linebacker from Notre Dame who played his high school ball at Crete Monet. He's another one of these shorter, although he's thicker. He's about 235 pounds. He's only 6'1". But he had 179 tackles over 2 years and was a really good football player at Notre Dame. Pretty good program. He was on the Butkus Award watch list each season that he played there. So just, you know, one of these kids who's on the cusp, he could just as easily go in the fifth or sixth round as be a free agent. And then they also signed Andrew Trombetti. They need pass rush. I think this kid is a little undersized and didn't get it done. He was pretty good being disruptive in the backfield with tackles for loss, but only had a couple three sacks over his college career. And then I'm going to surprise everybody because the two that I like the most are the two that locally you know the least about. But they signed a couple cornerbacks. And this kid from Dubuque, Michael Joseph, 6'1", about 190 pounds, really nice length, really nice size. And you know, again, now this is FCS football. I'm pretty sure it is. But he's a really interesting athlete. And then an even more interesting prospect is Kevin Tolliver, who was at LSU. This kid is 6'3", 204 pounds. He was a big-time player coming out of high school. He never really developed at LSU, but you find a cornerback that size, you're in Richard Sherman country. I'm not comparing him to Richard Sherman, but I'm just saying size, style, that type of football player. So that's just a partial list. But any one of those kids is going to get a real good look, in the rookie mini camp in Bourbonnais. I think you could see most of them on the practice squad, if not one or two of them on the final roster. And, you know, say what you will about Ryan Pace and free agency. I think the jury is still out on some of these drafts, but he has had some real success with undrafted rookie free agents. You go back to finding a Cam Meredith, a college quarterback recently converted to wide receiver and making him an in-demand wide receiver. In the NFL, Bryce Callahan, undrafted rookie free agent, been your starting nickel for the last couple of years. You've got Roy Robertson Harris, who I think they're not talking much about him because I think when they, you know, when they haven't ignored the need for pass rush, but as they haven't focused on that position, Ryan talks a lot, Ryan Pace, about, you know, what a good pass rusher Akiem Hicks is. And I get that he is. And he's planning on getting some push from Eddie Goldman too, but you don't traditionally get your sacks from your interior lineman in a 3-4 and a 30 front. I think Robertson Harris is the kid that they're thinking could become a force off the edge, another undrafted rookie free agent. So this is something that they've done really well under Ryan Pace, and this is as interesting a group as I've seen coming in. So we'll keep a close eye on them. We're going to take a quick break here. If you've got another call, we got time for it, 312-644-6767. Also, a couple interesting bites from Sammy Sosa. That's next right here on The Score. That was Sammy Sosa visiting at NBC Sports with David Kaplan. I believe that closing line was Mark and I shocked the world. I think he was talking about Mark Grace. There was also an extensive piece on Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game the other day, and I'm not sure I read it on my phone. Mitch Rosen sent it to me, so I'm not sure where it was from. But Kerry Wood had some really complimentary things to say about Sammy Sosa. And I know a big part of the issue with Sosa is that, well, Tom Ricketts has said he needs to apologize. I don't agree with that because Tom Ricketts had nothing to do with the Cubs when Sammy Sosa was here. So he certainly doesn't owe Ricketts an apology. Now, I think what Tom Ricketts is saying, he needs to apologize to the fans. I don't know that the fans really feel that way. I know that some of his teammates were unhappy with the way that he dominated the locker room, the way he departed, the boombox, the whole thing. Maybe he needs to apologize to some of them. And on the subject of apologies or being sorry, Sosa had this to say to David Kapp. What he said there was pretty clear. If I owe an apology to the fans, I'm sorry. What you have to understand is that Sosa has never, to my knowledge, admitted doing steroids. He's never acknowledged that he did something wrong. And again, believe me, guys, I'm not defending him. I'm not trying to make a case for it. I just find it to be an interesting topic. I am corrected by a texter here, and I think you're absolutely right. The texter is saying he was talking about himself and Mark McGuire, not Mark Grace, and I'm sure you're right. He was talking about 98 when he said me and Mark. He meant McGuire. He didn't mean Grace. I apologize for that. So, you know, guys, I don't know. And, you know, to be honest, I don't care if you agree with me or not. It's not important. It's just we're all entitled to our own feelings. I think it's kind of a shame that as huge as the Cubs are right now, as huge an event, every ball game is out there. As much as I sit there in my seats and I spend half the game looking up at the jerseys of Ernie and Billy and Ron and Maddox and Fergie, I don't know that you can say that any of them had a bigger impact on the organization than Sosa did. And so I'm not trying to spin positive or negative. I'm just saying, I mean, this is a larger than life Ruthian type character. And I use it on purpose. I'm talking about Babe Ruth, not comparing him to Babe Ruth. I'm saying Ruthian type character. How he got there, I don't know. You know, but it's real. It's history. It's the same reason that I will not go to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. And people tell me that I'm depriving myself because it's a wonderful experience. But I won't do it until Pete Rose is there. And I can't stand Pete Rose, by the way. But to say that Pete Rose doesn't belong in the Hall of, it's the Hall of Fame. And he is one of the greatest ball players in the history of the game. And to me, it's kind of the same thing with Sammy. I mean, what's fair about Mark McGuire is now an up-and-coming coach who may be a manager someday. And Sosa's not welcome in the ballpark. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting. I had not heard Sammy speak in some time. And he did have this visit at NBC Sports yesterday. Clearly, you can. I what I heard in those cuts is he would love to come back given the opportunity. You know, what the ground rules are and why this has to be a contest, I don't really know. Maybe you have thoughts about it. You can give us a call. You can text. I don't want to take over Julie's show because she's coming in here in about 10 minutes, and that may not be what she wants to talk about, but I got a few minutes if you want to call me or text me. This segment has been brought to you by Tomorrow Sleep. Enjoy a new Tomorrow hybrid mattress. Comfort by Serta Simmons Sleep Experts. Visit gettomorrowsleep.com. Use code TRAFFIC3 for $200 off when you spend $500 or more. Let's get out to the phones one more time. Keith is in the Ukrainian village. Keith, how you doing?
Hello. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I had a question. I had a question about Cam Meredith. I was curious if you thought when the Bears offered him the lower tender offer, were they actually doing him a favor. I appreciate that it's a business, but I was wondering if they took the attitude, you have a job here, you can bet on yourself for a year and do well and sign a new contract, but if somebody else is willing to pay you, you know, basically gave him an opportunity to shop around as opposed to offering him the offer that would have got them a second-round draft choice, and then nobody would have talked to him.
Well, you know, Keith,
thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for the call. I don't know what their intent was, but they clearly did him a favor because he got a $10 million deal out of it, and I think like 7 or 8 of it is guaranteed. I think what they were saying is that we're willing to pay you. I think the offer was about $1.4 million or whatever it was. It was the non-tender offer to prove that you're healthy and that you can be a number two or a number three receiver in the NFL. I think what was really going on from what we have heard from Ryan is I don't think they had a solid medical on him. And they're not going to say that. They don't want to say that. They don't want to hurt the kid. They don't want to, you know, cause him any harm. But I don't think they had any confidence in his knee. And when asked the question, you know, we visited with Ryan a few times over the weekend, and I think it was Tuesday before the draft when we talked about this. You know, Ryan didn't say anything negative about Cam Meredith. He simply said, you know, we get our doctor's reports and they get their doctor's reports and everybody does what they feel is best. And I think, and I'm just speculating here, that I think Ryan Pace believes that the Saints just took an unwise $10 million gamble on his knee. And I hope that's wrong because Cam Meredith is a great kid. He's a local kid. I'd love to see him become a big time receiver in the NFL. Solid number two. I don't think he's a number one. I hope that knee is okay. But remember, he didn't just tear the ACL. He tore the ACL and the MCL. And it's been a year. The Bears doctors looked at him. I think that they just weren't comfortable with the medical. And I think it was probably that simple. I think at the amount they tendered him, they were happy to have him come to camp and try and prove that he could play. But I think that was about it. Let's get to William on the south side. It's probably going to be our last call of the night. William, how you doing?
Okay, Hub, I got a question for you. Mm-hmm. You said you'd like to see Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, but if they put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, what about all 8 of the 1919 White Sox that did gambling?
William,
they should go in too then.
Yeah, no, time out. I got to be honest with you. I think Shoeless Joe Jackson should because he's a bigger-than-life character. The other 7 guys, name them. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, for your accomplishments on the field. I'm not saying he should be in for gambling. He should be in because he's the all-time major league hits leader. I mean, you know, he should be in because he was a all-time great ball player who made an awful mistake. Listen, I don't like the guy. He's not reticent for it. He hasn't really apologized. I think he's probably still gambling like mad. I'm not defending the guy. I'm just saying that to pretend that he's not one of the most famous and most important players in baseball is just kind of silly, you know, and it's hypocritical. Now, as far as the 1919 White Sox, yeah, Shoeless Joe Jackson should be in the Hall of Fame too. I can't really name the other 7 guys. I don't know that any of them are Hall of Famers, so I think it's a completely different example. I understand where you're going.
Only other person that might qualify is Buck Weaver, but not close.
Herb, you're a better student of the game than I am. I don't dispute that. I just don't really know. I don't even know how good Shoeless Joe Jackson was, but I know he's got a great name. So I know he was a great ball player. I've read enough about him. And by the way, there are 2 schools of thought on that. Some people believe Shoeless Joe may have even been an innocent victim, you know, in the whole thing. But I'm not an expert, guys. I'm not pretending to really know. There's one other text here that I just want to get to, and then we're going to be almost out of time. But it goes back to the Bears, and it's somebody saying, now I got to find it here because we're loaded up with people who think I'm a moron for liking Sammy Sosa. You may be right. Yeah, who knows? It's not for me to decide. I just give you my opinion. But this gets back to, here it is. Hub, after 4 Pace drafts, does Nagy think missing pieces are drafting either the tackle position, more edge rushers, or a lockdown corner? Do the Bears not value drafting impact players at those key areas? You got to understand what you're asking there. Ryan Pace has had 4 drafts now. Now, realistically, you get 1 pick in each draft, maybe 2 picks where you can draft an impact player. You can't draft an impact player with every pick. And even if you hit every one of those picks, at 28 picks, you've got half a roster. So, you know, and you're not going to hit them all. And so what they did when they drafted Kevin White, they drafted the guy who was pretty much unanimously considered the second best receiver in the draft that year. It wasn't just the Bears, and they had bad luck. There is absolutely no truth to this idea that he was injured in college. He had clean medicals from everybody. I mean, now I'm not optimistic, but what would have happened if he'd have stayed healthy? You just don't know. Then they came back, and they did try and draft. They traded up to draft what they thought was the number one impact edge rusher in the draft in Leonard Floyd, and he may still prove to be. He's shown some pretty nice things. And then they came back, and they drafted a quarterback. And you've got to give up extra picks to get that quarterback. And in their case, they gave up, you know, they basically gave up the third overall pick in the draft, 2 threes and a 4. Well, that's not nearly what the Rams paid for Jared Goff or what the Eagles paid for Carson Wentz, or even as much as the Buffalo Bills just gave up to draft Josh Allen, which I think is insanity. So, you know, you got to be realistic about what your assets are, you know, what you have to use and how you use them. And so I just, you know, I'm not saying that Ryan Pace has done a great job in the draft, but I think they clearly value, you know, all positions, and they're trying to get the guy who can make the biggest impact at the most important positions. And you know, go back to that first draft with Kevin White. Wide receivers, they're the stars right now. They're the divas. I mean, you know, the best players in the NFL, or at least the most productive, are the Antonio Browns and Julio Jones and Odell Beckham Jr. So they were right there. And obviously, I don't have to argue about the quarterback or the edge rusher. And now, you know, this year you come back, you do it on an inside linebacker in Vic Fangio's defense. When you look at those 49er title teams, you know, with Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman inside, they're trying to draft impact players in the right spot. You just got to hope that some of them work out. You know, listen, maybe it all, you know, goes to hell this year. Maybe this is the year it all comes together. Maybe Kevin White's got some football in him. Maybe Leonard Floyd stays on the field. Maybe Roquan Smith is the player we think he is, and Trubisky becomes the quarterback they've been seeking forever. That's why they play the games, folks, and that's why I'm looking forward to being with you for a long time, hopefully, but especially the next 8-9 months as we build towards another season and we see where the Bears are at. Guys, we are out of time. I want to say thank you to an outstanding lineup of guests. We had Eric Edholm from Pro Football Weekly here, Patrick Finley, Bears beat reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, Bruce Levine, our SCORE senior baseball analyst and expert, Ryan Hannibal from WEEI Radio checked in to talk about the New England Patriots. Always an outstanding job in the production booth when you get to sit in on Lawrence's show, because Herb Lawrence, Eli Hershkovitz, two of the best in the business. Julie DeCaro, thank you so much for your great work in the update studio all night long. And Julie is waiting outside the studio because the next 2 hours are hers. If you want the best sports talk in Chicago from 10 to midnight, you got to stay right where you're at. I know Julie's got a great show planned for you. For myself, guys, thank you so much for being with me. I'm going to be back. When am I back? I'm back a week from Saturday. We're going to do a Saturday fun fest after the Cubs game. Until then, be well, everybody. Have a great rest of the evening. Stick with Julie. You got great sports talk coming up next here at The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.